markets never did turn out to be of any profit, but the rattlesnakes turned out to be a very profitable business with George K. N. Canning rattlesnake meat, and then using every part of the snake for commercial use, and even having a museum to, you know, show people what was done with the rattlesnake. In other words, it almost came out of necessity. Here he came down here from up north somewhere to help in the development of the Arcadia Gardens east of town, about 10 miles, just short of where the airfield was, Dorfield. And it fell through during the crash of 1929, and their houses were left half finished, and roads and curbs and sidewalks had been put in when maybe a house or two had been built on a large subdivision. They were just left to grow up and weeds take over again. And there was just numbers of large developments in this area prior to 1929 when the crash came, and even up into 32 when the Depression set in, when the banks closed and this type of thing. So when he could no longer build houses and develop the land and sell it to northern investors who were coming down, he resorted to something that was on his land, and that was snakes. And he made a complete industry, made a complete new industry right during the Depression, and made it profitable, and received worldwide acclaim from it. Kings and queens all over the country, world, got meat from him, and delicacies of restaurants, restaurants that serve all kind of delicacies, ordered his canned meat. He got just a lot of publicity for Arcadia. I guess probably from my research, he received more publicity during those years of the Depression in the early 30s than any other person in DeSoto County, including doctors, lawyers, and bankers, and anybody else. I mean, for this, for actually publicity for the city and county, he got more. Late in the late 30s, he went to Tampa and bought the property just south of the Gander Bridge and built, put his museum there and canned meat there, and operated a post office that he found the post office. He was the postmaster, and then after he died, his wife became postmaster, mistress. So his son still lives over in Tampa area, I understand, Don Ian. His other son, Richard Ian, died.
Who did?
Yeah, there's only two boys when Richard died. He married Teresa Powell, you remember? I was talking about Dwight Powell's sister.
Well, now, when I was switching tapes, this is tape number two, January the 20th, 1987, Arcadia, Florida, Bureau of Florida Folklife. Steve Frank was talking to Howard and Velma Melton. You mentioned leggings, and if you didn't have a gun or if you didn't have leggings when you went out, you were in real trouble.
Yeah.
Well, what...
A lot of people wore boots, you know, and... But snake leggings were used very common with fishermen and hunters. It was more important for hunters to have them was fishermen, because the rattlesnakes weren't around the water as much as the moccasins were. Mm-hmm. So the hunters, they had to fight the rattlesnakes. And usually when you found one, you found more than one of the rattlesnakes, you know. And moccasins stood for that. I've been out there fishing and see maybe a dozen moccasins around in the very general area I was. So much, sometimes after rain until it'd scare you off, there were so many of them, you just would not stay there. I mean, you know, it was a matter of one or two. And every time you'd leave your fish on a string and leave it in the water to keep your fish alive, because then you fish from the creek bank, you come back in 10 or 15 minutes and there would be a moccasin eating your fish. I mean, it was very common. You just, they were so plentiful.
Well, yes, ma'am. We all, all right, it's fine. This is, I'll turn it off. Yeah, one of the things Tom kept harping and harping about was the ditches.
The ditches?
Yeah, and the draining of Florida and how that changed the landscape.
Oh, yeah. That was bad enough, but when the United States engineers straightened out the Kissimmee River and drained it directly into the lake, it really fouled up the lake and ruined the fishing natural proteins or whatever it is the fish eat, you know, mm-hmm. that's accumulated. Because it, when it goes direct, it's almost like a canal. It
just runs.
Just takes everything in its wake, and it overfeeds the lake, but it drains the nutrients from all the curves that were taken out. And they even in recent years been talking about putting it back in its natural flow.
Well, the Army Corps of Engineers, I guess, the only time it said no to land developers was here in Florida for the 10,000 islands down south,
mm-hmm.
Collier, because they wanted to take the...
Thank you, brother. You won't drop that thing. I just don't want to stack it too.
It's very good. See how fast it disappeared.
Well, thank you. More he's
anymore.
Fast too. I eat slow.
They haven't developed that yet, have they?
No, and I'm supposed to go down there, and Marco Island and Goodland, which is basically just north of that whole string of things there, they were both worked on, and so then that's when this response happened, because they just felt that there was too many things messed up. But
Collier,
this one, sir?
Collier County was named after Byron Collier, who came to Florida after imagine a fortune up north in advertising on streetcars and buses and things like that. And he became about the largest landholder in Florida, owning most of Collier County, which was named after him.
Mm-hmm.
He owned, at one time, interest in two banks here in Soda County before the banks closed in 1932. One of them was the Florida Trust and Banking Company that closed in 1929, and the other was the First National Bank that closed in 1933, I think it was. 33, yeah.
I thought Florida had the crash like in 1926, and that sort of like...
No, that was the land boom. That was the boom in the 20s, the middle 20s. Up to 1929, actually through 29. It was in late November 29, I believe, when we had the bust of the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when land development just came to a screeching halt in Florida. And during the 30s, right here in DeSoto County, there was hardly a half a dozen houses built from, say, 29 to the middle 30s. It just was... Land was almost valueless because there was no building on it, and about the only profitable way it was used was cattle raising and citrus. And then it was good only because the men who had inherited the land or families who were on it, but it was cheap. That's when some of the northern people started coming down, developing our prairie land for farming. You know, they would do all the developing, or they would just sell you the land, let you develop it, or they would go all the way and do all the work, by clearing the land, raising the products, and selling for you. All you'd have to do is just finance it. Similarly to what American Agronomics, which is now Orange Co., has been doing the last few years, developing the prairie with citrus. Back years ago, there's too much water out there to grow citrus.
Mm-hmm.
But since it's drained, the land has been sweetened, either by nature or by whatever chemicals that fertilizer need. And now it's a very profitable thing. And the world's largest grove is out here on the prairie.
Hmm. Well, when
the
Yes, sir, I'm sorry. What I'm thinking is, what year, if, okay, the crash is in 1929, so the land boom was in 26, I guess, and then that bottom out.
Middle class, yeah.
29 is the American Depression, and World War II is...
41.
Okay.
December 4th,
1941. Where in that period of time does Florida get drained off so that the mucklands become...
It was drained off during the Depression when the Roosevelt administration came in. You know, they set a lot of government programs
up in motion, that's right,
to provide for farmers and ranchers and cow people. Like I mentioned before, Kerry Carlton had been a cattleman all of his life and a grove man too. He bought nearly a quarter of a million acres out here on the prairie for $75,000 on his name and some holdings he had. The government paid him to clear the land and to plant grass on it, and he became, so to speak, instantly a multimillionaire. Mm-hmm. And others similarly did the same on maybe a lesser scale than he did.
Mm-hmm.
Her daddy owned Caterpillar tractors, and he would clear the land for these big ranchers, and he'd keep his tractors going as much as 24 hours a day. The only time he'd stop them is for the tractor driver to get off, change shifts, gas it up, mow it up. I worked for him some myself, but he just drove a machine until it broke down. He didn't ever let it rest.
So when Roosevelt came in, this was what year?
He was elected November 32, and so his program started in 33. WPA, the FERA, NRA, a lot of the federal programs,
mm-hmm.
business and farming and schools programs, a lot of things. People were given work, making $1 a day maybe, making 2 or 3 days a week sometimes a full week. They worked on mosquito control. You know, we had a lot of weeds and mosquitoes and natural underbrush, and my dad worked on a mosquito control with a crew of men and out here on the prairie. The prairie was just infested with mosquitoes. Only Indians could live out there on it. They were kind of mean to it, you know. After you get stung so many thousand times, I guess you get immune to it. But it was devastating.
I'm
fishing in the daytime almost. You could hardly stand it unless you had something over your head or used some repellent or spray.
Yeah, I mentioned to someone that when I was at Fish Eating Creek, mosquitoes were just eating me up alive.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, that's because you didn't go to Fish Eating Creek. And he said, well, you're sure it wasn't started there. But, you know, they call it Skeeter Eating Creek.
I think they like new people, too.
Yeah.
It's a funny thing, too. Back during the Depression, land around lakes were not as valuable as land where there was farming and grove and things like that. The ridge section, which includes Highland County, around Lake Placid, Seaver Neighbor Park, land was homesteaded in this century. And because there wasn't an adequate way for a man to make a living after he would homestead it, he would move away from it back into the interior or into this area where he could farm and raise a grove, and he would give up his homesteading out there on the lake. Now the lake values are 10 times the value of land around here. I've got a sister that owns a home on Lake Placid there, and anything out there will cost you from $150,000 up. I mean, land large enough to build a home on. The homes on the land is almost inconsequential to the value of the land itself. And yet, just before I was born, people were homesteading and giving it up because there was no way to make a living there. Mm-hmm. Back then, there wasn't much recreation. People didn't have the money to go places and travel. If they went anywhere, they went to make a living.
Mm-hmm.
And when they migrated to Florida, the early ones didn't come down here.
Yeah, I know, to sit in the sun.
Sit out in the sun. The beaches, I remember when I lived in Bradenton, and the beaches for miles, there were no cottages. There was not the first home. You could hardly find a picnic within miles to even have a little picnic out on the beach. I was here at Holmes Beach, Bradenton. There's a little old, narrow wooden bridge to it, a dirt road most of the way. That's in my lifetime. And so land was valueless even on the ocean. And around the lakes were the same thing. See, so your more valuable property was where people could make a living. But now it's reversed. The tourist industry is as valuable in the state of Florida as the cattle and the citrus industry. I mean, you know, they rank pretty close together, but the change has taken place in my lifetime. There were a few rich people that came down naturally and built nice big homes and developments and things like that. But I'm talking about by and large, the people who came down here were just people seeking homesteading property, and they could get about as much land as they could clear. You didn't have your tractors, your caterpillars, and it was done very slowly. So if a man didn't have the money to last him until he could clear his land and build his home, I mean, what was a homestead good for if it didn't bring any money to you?
Interesting. You couldn't live.
No.
Maybe like an orange or something.
No, honestly, I'm not finding
it. I was just reading an article yesterday people were giving up their homesteads out there on the highlands there, right by the lakes. Anyway, it's hard to believe that now they're so priceless that, you know, the average working man can't even buy a piece of property big enough to build a house.
Okay.
No one's trying to think.
Yeah, well, it's just like fashions again, or just lifestyles. I mean, you know, they had to have their property to eat. Mm-hmm. And now the whole thing is land development, and the money isn't generated in that way. The daily living just doesn't happen that way. The social facts have changed.
There was a big developers came down, like Flagler with the railroad, and Plant over in Tampa with the railroad, and Collier, big land developer, owner, Florida man, that had made their money and other things. Just like in Georgia now, prior to the opening up of Florida, South Georgia, around Thomasville, or about as far south as anybody came that had money, like the Vanderbilt, the Rockefellers and things like that. Gradually, then that came down to Boca Grande, Miami, and Ormond Beach and places like that. But there was large hotel wooden structures up in Thomasville back in the last century before Florida even was open up and all. No roads down here, the railroads came in about 1882 or 3. But before that, you could hardly get in and out of Florida, except by waterway. And it wasn't anything on these ports. I mean, Tampa was a little community itself then. It wasn't. Back the early part of this century, Arcadia was larger than Miami population. I used to have a map of Florida then, and they gave the population of all the cities. And we were actually larger about the turn of the century, or the first of this century, than Miami was. So it wasn't but anything but a little fishing village. And Bradenton over here was smaller than Arcadia when we moved there in 1924. And we weren't big, but people preferred living inland and away from the water rather than toward the water. Now they won't. Water in the inland. Land is for the people who don't have the money to live around the water.
But some that come here haven't ever been around a bad hurricane. He was in a bad hurricane.
What, do they have bad hurricanes here in the interior?
No, but I mean, some people get so close to the
water,
you
know, ever had,
they have to leave when they have a bad storm.
The worst one we ever had in my lifetime was 1960. But I remember the storm in 1926 and 28. 26, I think, was there several thousand people lost their lives around Lake Okeechobee.
26?
Hundreds of people lost their lives on the old overseas railroad to Key West. A whole trainload of soldiers were washed into the water.
Really remember it or remember?
Well, I've read about it so much, I think I remember. I was only about five, so probably.
I do remember a little bit about that one in 29. I hate to admit it, but you don't want it full.
No.
You want some more ice?
No. Thank you.
But I just remember a few little things about it.
We got a girl about our age. Well, she's younger than us because she was born during that 26 storm.
That's a way to come
along. She was born during the storm, and they said she was saved on a floating mattress, I think. And they named her Okeechobee.
They call her Chobee.
She's the head bookkeeper for the large Bright Owl Ranch out here now. She's one of the daughters of one of the Parker brothers, big cow people.
Did they live in Okeechobee when they...
I don't know about that. I don't know.
You would enjoy those plantations up in Thomasville, Georgia. They have tours.
Yeah. That's where the rich people used to come before Florida was opened up. The big steel people and people in the industry. The rich. And they bought these big lands. Plantations, built big southern plantations on them. Like during the Civil War, mm-hmm. those same time. A lot of them now. In Thomas County, yeah. Oh. The only difference is they have hired help instead of slaves.
Yeah.
But they...
They're good too.
When we were up there, that thing, 72, we were up there 65 through 72. And they furnished milk to all the people who worked for them. And they would put it in those old milk bottles with the cream on the top like they used to, you know. Not homogenized. It'd be homogenized, but not pasteurized, but not homogenized. And those old gooseneck bottles that we all grew up with, now they're collectors out of those bottles, but they were still using those when we were there.
They had a cook out there for the hired hands.
They make a lot. They keep the traditions of 100 years earlier, or more than 100, now 150.
When we lived up there, we had a friend that worked out. He was, sort of like a, well, I don't know if he was like a general manager, but anything that went wrong, she'd always call him.
They had hunting buggies, wagons, and they had actually a museum, a room that's bigger than this house, with just buggies and wagons in it. They would have famous people down to go hunting there. They'd dress them in costume. They'd have a man that drove the thing just like a chauffeur, take these hunters out, you know.
Dogs.
They still got virgin timber up there. I mean, timber that's never been cut. Beautiful stuff up there. Lots of virgin timber up there.
And when we had friends visit us, this friend would let us bring them out there and show them around, you know.
Give me another piece of bread.
But the lady that owned the plantation, one of the big ones that we're talking about, special where our friend worked, the lady that owned it died since we left, and the man that we're talking about died too.
She was the daughter of Mark Hanna, which was a big owner of one of the big steel mills up north. I'd read about Mark Hanna. He was a very large steel magnate. And he was the one that bought it. They had a mammoth house, something like 25 rooms, bathrooms for each room. And they'd have
They're waiting in line.
No, they'd have just their friends down to entertain them, you know, take them out horse riding. They raised horses, raised dogs, and...
One person just in charge of all the dogs.
You know, it'd have to be a tax write-off because it was a money-making scheme.
And the horses, they had Appaloosa or something, you know, all kind of real fancy horses. Show horses. They took them to shows. I mean, they would take them like Kentucky, you know, and up,
where else did they go?
Maine or
in England,
something?
Maine and England. They'd take them over there, too.
And they had people just in charge of all of that, you know. It was really interesting. Should we have any more?
No, ma'am, I'm fine. Ate so much, I'm going to go to sleep now.
When I get to take these to the doctor, you know, take a nap.
Did you get all these you want?
Yes, sir. Okay. I took one copy and your other should be there.
You got that one, then, did you?
Yes, sir.
Today,
it just started to rain this morning.
It did?
Yeah, the Sarasota side, it was raining.
Raining or foggy?
Well, it was raining. It wasn't heavy rain, but it was raining. Clean the windshield. It's coming back. Mm-hmm.
Sort of acts like
it
might rain again.
Well, Florida is...
you can't tell.
I'm sorry?
I said you can't tell what it's going to do in Florida. It may rain real hard and then clear up and the sun comes out.
You know, Florida's a place where it rains when and the sun is still out.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I've seen that happen.
They say that when that's happening, the devil is beating his wife. Did you know
that? No.
Do you think there's any truth to that?
I didn't know that he got married.
Look at me eating sandwich and...
You were talking to him earlier. Because he's always through before I am. When he eats his last bite, I'm eating my first one usually.
Do you have any other sands like that around here? I mean, you know, just...
Any what?
Well, any sands like, you know, when it's raining like that, the devil's beating his wife.
Oh, sands? Oh, I imagine if you stuck around a while, you'd hear a lot of
superstitions. She's very superstitious. She comes from a family of people
who are superstitious. Not really.
She won't walk under a ladder.
Well, I have done it.
If a black cat runs across the road, she wants me to turn around.
I don't really think it'll happen, but just in case.
And if we're walking down the street, we're getting ready to cross the street, and there's a tree there, our post. If I walk on one side, she's got to come all the way around
to
walk on
the
same side of me. And I try to break all of these things. I try to do just the opposite of what she...
What's the problem of walking around separate... I mean, you mean you can't go around the post
office?
No, she won't go around one and let me go around the other.
Well, you get mad.
And another thing, you know, you're not supposed to forgive. She's not supposed to give anybody a knife. That's bad luck because that'll cut your friendship.
It's just silly things.
Well, Greeks used to say if you drop a piece of silver on the floor, that means someone's coming to visit you.
Yeah, let's see. What it seems like they say.
If you know that you somebody come to see you here.
What do they say here? I'm sorry.
If you know that you somebody's coming to see you.
Well, did they used to be more superstitious in the past?
The further you go back, the more people did things the homespun way, and they would use some of the craziest ideas like tying asphidity around your neck to ward off...
Or babies. That's what they did to babies.
Ward off coughs or colds or...
Keep them...
Diarrhea what?
Tying a what, sir? I'm sorry?
Asphidity.
What's an asphidity?
I don't know, but it's a terrible
medicine
smell.
It's medicine they used to give to babies for a stomachache. I think it had... I don't know if it has paregoric in it or not. I don't know what it is, but it smells...
Tom's got this creosol kind of thing that he uses every day.
Mm-hmm.
He says that that's sort of like gives him strength or something.
How does he use it? You mean he takes it in the...
It's in water. I mean, he sort of like dissolves it, and then he takes like 3 teaspoons in the morning and
mm-hmm. There's a doctor here, Dr. Gordon McSwain, that's written a book, Cracker Cures, that took up a lot of the old medicines and herbs that people used to mix and make for various things.
But there's still people
some
who do
were
that.
Valid. Yeah. I mean, some were
some
valid.
Some people might. I mean, you know.
Her mother used to roll pills with some kind of mixture and then roll it in flour and get it from being sticky.
In it. Somebody and told her that, and it really did. I mean,
every spring,
mind,
she had to take it because they had the crazy idea that your system needed
to be
purging every spring.
Well, you know, like they would give you something for, they called it liver medicine. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard of that?
Well, I've heard of liver medicine, but I don't know.
Cars with liver,
well,
cars, liver.
But,
oh,
you know, like in the spring, people would just take a round, they called it, you know,
around the day, maybe around
it, you know.
The next day or two. That
well, anyway,
dose.
They'd call it a round, like take it for a week or two or something like that. Some kind of, you know, something like that. And it was supposed to sort of clean you out, you know. And then you didn't get sick for, you know, maybe all summer. I don't know if there's anything to it or not.
You
but
can
it
see
seems
the,
to help.
The need, though, for cracker cures.
I was trying to think.
Making your own medicine because you didn't have access to a drugstore. You didn't have the money to go if you had access. So a lot of it was homespun and pharmacy.
Is there anything called blue mass? What is it? A powder? Or
I don't know, but I think
blue
that was one of the ingredients in there, wasn't it?
She put copper or coppers? Is there a copper?
Coppers, yes.
Powder or something?
No, it's a kind of a crystal. I think they broke it up though and mixed it in
with
something
else. Yeah, must have been. Anyway, I think she put copper and blue mass, whatever that is.
But you know,
and some turpentine, and then made little teeny pills and rolled them in flour. I don't know whether they really helped or not, but I never was sick.
I started working in a drugstore when I was about 11 or 12 years old. And the druggist then was
good for whatever ails you.
Prescribed the medicine for people like a doctor does now. He didn't write out a prescription, but he had his own formulas and compounds. A lot of time they would be in pills or capsules or liquids. Biggest portion of prescriptions back then were compounds. They were not patent medicine. There were patent medicines, but prescriptions, by and large, were compounded on the spot. They didn't come in big bottles, and you pour 6 ounces or 8 ounces.
I know, they had to mix them right on the spot.
Mm-hmm. And the doctor I worked for was in demand more for doctoring people than the practicing physicians around town were. And you, for two reasons, you could always get to the druggist and he would always prescribe you something based on what you were able to pay. And of course some of the doctors did that. We had our family doctor would never prescribe a prescription for us that cost over a dollar or two because he knew that we weren't able to pay. But that was before penicillin and some of the more expensive stuff came along. And it was some of the old traditional medicines that go back further. But it was a doctor and a druggist then would just prescribe and compound the medicine on the spot. You'd tell him that you needed something for diarrhea, and he'd go back there and mix two or three things, and he'd name it something because I remember one prescription he had was for sore throats. You'd swab your throat with it. You know, Mandel solution. And it was iodine and something else to make it sweet and syrupy. But it was real good for sore throats. But It wasn't anything like antibiotics or like penicillin, but it was effective.
He started soon enough.
But going back even further than that, you know, when people didn't have access to drugstores and money either, they would, like if when kids would cut their foot on a glass or
step on a rusty nail.
Rusty nail. Instead of going back to get a tetanus shot, mother would soak a rag in kerosene and tie it around her foot, or turpentine and kerosene, both of them. I've had them both. Whatever, if you didn't have turpentine, kerosene would go. And none of us ever developed any tetanus or anything like that. And we'd step on rusty nails.
12 children.
Cut our feet. I remember one time jumping a fence into a bed of broken milk bottles. Mm. And I just slipped my foot underneath from about one side to the other.
It
took
a
long time for it ever heal up because it had a lot of proud flesh in there. But I don't ever remember seeing a doctor hardly till I was...
What did they do when you got burned?
Till
put kerosene on?
I was about grown. That's the truth. I don't remember going to see a doctor.
Do you know what they did to your back?
They didn't do anything.
Probably put some lard on it.
No, put something on it. A big old patch. I was playing in a fire one time with a stick like that. And a piece of hot coals came landed right down the back of my shirt and stuck to my body, of course. And I imagine she just cleaned it with some kerosene or turpentine or something like that and just kept it open.
Probably put some lard on it. Hog lard.
Well, I guess 11 of us were born at home. Dorothy may have been born in the hospital. No, I believe 12 of us were born at home.
Scott was, you were in Manatee when she
was
born.
We lived in Manatee, but I don't know that she was born in the hospital. Of course, they're doing that now more, even without a doctor, with midwives and things like that, but it was
I think
it was either done by a midwife back then, or either the doctor would come and deliver the child at home. I guess a lot of my brother and sister were delivered at home by a doctor.
I don't know if I was born in the hospital or not, because I remember mother saying how long Dr. Kirk came and stayed with her. I might have been born at home too.
Doctor would make house calls then.
That's right.
For a dollar and a half or $2, but if you'd go to the office, he'd see you for a dollar.
I remember about $3.
But a dollar then was a lot of people's daily wage.
And this doctor that was our family doctor was so sweet. I mean, if he thought of him as a day, he wouldn't even mention, and then he'd never send him a bill or anything. I make on him many thousands of dollars people owed him when he died. You never send a bill. Never refuse to send. You could even go by the house to send if they need him. My mother had cancer. And he used to come by every morning on his way to work just to see how she was doing.
And that was even just 25 years ago.
I mean, we didn't call him. He would just stop by to see him. He delivered me and all three of our children.
So we've come from a primitive age to a modern technology. Technological age in our lifetime. But our older brother and sister even are more remote than that. They remember the horse and buggy days, you know, when there was all the transportation for the automobile.
50 years ago. I know that people can tell how they look.
I remember when
I rode
in an automobile. I was a teenager then, I guess. And the young fellow was driving the car up to 50 miles an hour, and I thought those wheels were going to go off.
Yeah, you have to watch yourself.
We bragged about that for a long time around there.
And tried it as soon as you got a chance.
Well, back then, you'd have to be a rich son and even have a bicycle. I worked at Western Union, a postal telegraph. There wasn't even many bicycles for kids around here during the Depression when I was growing up. I remember our high school was just a couple blocks over here. There wasn't but two or three cars among even the teachers. I remember the first automobile any student ever drove to the high school, and it was kind of a torn down old Model A, and he would see how many kids he could get on there and take them for a ride. You know, that was something. But you know, back then we had, the water was good, plenty lakes and plenty creeks and plenty clear water in the river. We'd swim anywhere, we'd fish anywhere. There was no pollution that we knew of. If anything was polluted, it was us, you know, that we were needing to take a shower, a bath, and every day we'd go swimming, every time every woman would go swimming.
Yeah,
after
mine.
School, and during the summer, every day, of course.
Yeah, there's a joke in my family that my brother's godfather used to swim in the Chicago River. So you go in there now, if you throw a match in it, it'll explode, you know?
Excuse me, you're okay.
So what happens is they always ask him, they say, hey, Lou, you been down in the river lately? You been swimming here lately? Because they always pick on him because he used to talk about that, and we just say, my God, you can't go in there, you get sick. But that's part of this whole, it's a mentality.
Well, up until...
I'm just going to get my camera.
Yeah. Velma, who is?
Hey, Annie.
Oh.
My boy.
Tell me that story. Let me turn on my tape recorder and tell me that story.
Old John. He said, old John ain't never been no worse. They just dig him up and send him up. They won't know the difference. So they sent John up there, let him have a ride.
Who told you that?
Huh?
Who told you?
Man, I heard that 50 years ago.
That's been printed in all your history books.
Yeah.
I guess I heard it, but I forgot it.
Yes,
it's always a little different. Way each time it's told of them.
Yeah.
You know, Bone the Sail ferried just across the road.
I know it. I told him that. Bone was the one that was telling one story one time, and then when he got in court, he was telling him again. You know, what did he say then? What?
He says, I was talking then. I'm
swearing now.
Now.
I was talking then, and I'm swearing now. Didn't you say so and so?
Yeah, everybody knows those.
I was talking then, but I'm swearing now.
I never did no Bone the Sail. I think he's before my time.
Well, he died
in 1921. Huh?
1921.
The woman said he went by one woman's house and wanted fixing the dinner. So he paid her for it. And after she called men to eat and had some butter on there, and he just cut on a big hunk like that and put it on his biscuit. And she said, "Mr. Mazzell," said, "that stuff cost us 60 cents a pound." He said, "It's worth every cent of it."
Velma, did they ever get that drunk that hit that down there?
No, he went around the corner and he said, "I'll be right back."
Why didn't you get his tag number?
I couldn't.
Too quick for you, wasn't it?
I couldn't have remembered it.
Why, did you hear that?
She got the tag number of another car, but that wasn't the one involved.
Yeah, but I think he said that somebody ran him off the road, but I think he was drinking and going fast.
They just passed
him, and when he saw somebody coming, I think he jerked the wheel.
You're talking about
a
man that ran in a person's yard down the street.
Knocked a tree down.
The tree was about this big around, beautiful tree, and it just picked that thing up,
broke
the root and all, broke it in half, and picked all the roots up and just landed out there on top of the yard.
She
squashed a garbage can just as flat as a pancake.
The policemen were going to hammer.
They came.
Car place in town.
I think they are.
Yeah, he's got broken windows, got headlights, and part of the trim of the car.
They don't have his car fixed.
And the undergirding of the fender. He left several parts of the car.
He had a flat tire.
Flat tire.
And he lost his mud guard off of one fender. There was broken glass. I think it was the windshield and the headlight. And there's red paint on another tree that he hit. He didn't knock it over, it was a little too big, but he took all the bark off one side and left red paint on it. And he had a flat tire, and his car wouldn't start. It quit running and he was having a little trouble getting started. I think he might have had a leak somewhere. His gas tank or...
And then you remember before automobiles, you had buggies and wagons?
I'll be right back. And he got real slow in the wagon. But with the jet engine, of course, I couldn't stop him. I think I know what he looks like. I told him the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She
screamed before
I went to.
I don't know where he
disappeared.
Sure.
Let Lonnie tell about the time when he was in Fort Meade. His daddy sent him across the field just before World War I, wasn't it?
I'm living in War II.
Oh, you live
living out West War II. And he bought a big old steam engine out of Carlson Field after it was dismantled the first time. It was going to carry it to Hona and run a sawmill. So I drove a two-horse wagon from Fort Chua to Carlson Field, brought that down to haul the stuff back. And he was going to drive the engine, but it would run pull itself, but had to haul the stuff that he wanted to carry back. That day that I went down there, that night, I was 21 years old.
And that was about 35 miles. How long did it take you to make the trip?
All day.
Yeah.
Started out west of War II, 3 miles west of War II, just as soon as I could see. And I got to Carlson Field just as the sun was setting.
And how old are you going to be now again, sir?
85.
85. Mm-hmm.
We've been married
53
years.
That was right after World War I.
Yeah.
When they dismantled Carson Field the first time.
Mm-hmm.
They were selling the surplus.
Separate stuff, and he bought that steam engine from the laundry down there at Carson Field. They were going to run a sawmill out there west of
the... Were the roads paved then, or were they dirt roads?
Dirt roads.
All dirt.
Yeah. And I could whip those horses or mules, it was, make them trot to that wagon. If I hadn't been there, I wouldn't have got there.
Well, how did you, they'd have to do without feed all day then?
Huh?
Or what? Did you take some feed with you on the wagon?
I had feed down and feed them that night. Mm. I didn't eat no dinner till I got down there.
Mm. Like giving me a sandwich.
That was a long time traveling.
Did you said you used the whip? Was that what you did to crack them? To get
them? Yeah. Whip.
I whipped them many a horse to make them. We used to hire the group, and I'd get, you know, when the water sprouts out of the tree and cut the thorns all off of it.
Good smooth piece of that was a handmade
one. I just about run it, so I walked back in the hair and about that one. I'd hit her and she'd take off the trot for a space about that door.
Didn't do that.
And she'd slow down.
You got there by just before dark.
She was so slow till it was pitiful.
Well, she out west of all
I'd have the grove one way and the sister would have it the other way. We used to have to walk.
It's almost like if you walked it now.
Yeah.
Tell them about some of the medicines y'all used to take and your mama used to make for you.
Now, we were talking about
No, they didn't make that Dutton. Papa ordered it. I don't know where he ordered it from.
Well, Velma's body used to roll pills from
No, not Dutton.
It wasn't Dutton? Well, what is
that
Dutton?
That was a liquid.
It's something that tastes
it's
horrible.
It's the bitterest medicine.
Is that
grandma
what they used
to
clean you out every spring?
No. I don't remember that far.
We used to take what we call a purgative every spring. Liver medicine. Everybody needed their intestines cleared out. You're a
spring. Well, I take that.
You didn't have to take any of
that? Then, but I didn't take it too much.
I guess they
so
thought
bitter.
You got clogged up during the winter or summer. You had to be cleaned out during
well,
the
Daddy, we better go.
Huh?
We better go.
Why? You just got here. We might want to talk to you about something.
You fixed a hook up something to record.
I'm trying to get more power to it.
Here. You might want to. If it works over there, that's okay.
Well, it doesn't matter. I just thought it might be a little bit. All of these
So he's collecting all kinds of information about how people used to
all
live, what they used to do.
Oh, I don't want to tell the things that I used
herbs.
To have to go
did you ever take your sassafras tea and all that?
No. I never did drink sassafras tea. I've heard of it, but I never did drink
Well, what'd they do to you to keep you well when you were young?
Well, I told you. There's a black draw and that Dutton that Papa, he ordered.
Black draw?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
black they draw. Still make black draw.
They still, well,
that's
I
what, is, what is black draw?
It's a laxative.
It's a herb, I think.
It's in a kind of, they make it in a liquid.
Have you ever
they
tasted
make it also
it?
In
yeah,
a
powder.
Was
not
in powder. Powder.
Yeah, they make powder back
here.
Draw.
Aspirated around your neck when you were
no,
a kid?
We were talking about that.
No, but I don't.
Well, I mean, I don't know it if I did.
Aspirated around your neck when you were a kid?
Well, I'm not so
with
you, so I didn't worry.
Pooping toss and everything like that.
Is that what it was for, Aspirated?
Aspirated. Ward
off
diseases.
All the time.
Well, how would they hang it around your neck? I don't understand.
You put it in a bag right there.
And you put a little bag?
Ball like out of it.
A bowl? Bra?
Yeah, and
run that
aspirin.
Well, I thought it was always a liquid.
No,
it'd be down under your clothes where you couldn't see
gum,
it.
Gum,
it was a gum.
Yeah,
you could
but
do it.
Later they did make
yeah,
it in a liquid.
Form.
There is a liquid. I used
that's
to
because
that's milk of aspirin.
Okay.
Yeah.
I used to
okay.
give Peggy that when she'd have cholera.
I know.
That's the best stuff in the world.
It smelled awful, but it worked.
It is good.
You didn't ever make any medicines home kind, doctor yourself? What'd you do? There wasn't no doctor around to go
I
see.
I just stayed well.
Stayed well. What if you got sick or got cut or broke an arm or something? What did you
well,
do?
Well, I never did. No, well, I had got sick, but I never did break an arm.
You never did have the doctor come see you out there?
I know one.
Were any of you born
used
in
to
your
do
home
me
or were you born in the hospital?
I was born at home. And
you
I,
know,
mom,
sort of
I was the only one mom I ever had
she would give me a teaspoonful of sugar with two or three drops of turpentine on it for a cold. And that was supposed to really be good for
you. Well, now the other thing was that turpentine used to be made around here, right?
Yeah, they used to have steel oh, yes,
friends.
Yes, right. Bar, even until recently.
Oregon.
Yes, that's right. We had a Gulf Naval turpentine
time out.
Did your mama have doctors?
You know, they would cut the trees.
I don't think she had a doctor
yes,
either.
They would drink.
Like
well,
they do maple
trees
in the north.
They
had gum and run down in to keep
with her.
Go down and strip off
me,
the sap and stuff like that. And the gum would run down in that box and they go down and chip that out and boil it. It still, turpentine still.
Yeah.
And then,
turpentine fields, sawmills,
yeah.
They were everywhere. In every community, you had
you know, you had so much timber back in the early part of the century, virgin timber, you know, and they've been cut. But boy, when they got through with it, there wasn't none of the stumps left. But then that turned into a business.
We had stumps?
Stumps. Mm-hmm. That's right. And they would petrify in the ground before they'd rot. They had so much rosin thing, you know, turpentine in the vines I'm talking about, that they would just become harder as the years go by. A lot of the homes around here are built from that hard lumber, and you can hardly drive a nail in it. It's almost petrified.
You put a nail through it.
And it's gummy too. I mean, you can saw it, and it's moist with so much of the original stuff that was maintained in there. It won't dry out. It won't harden. Well, the lumber hardens, but the smell and the taste and the moisture is still there, just like it has always been. I guess it will stay there forever. But see, then land was not worth nothing because they cut all the timber off. And you couldn't farm it because you had so many stumps. And then these stump companies like Hercules Powder Company out of Jacksonville used to contract people with big trucks and tractors to dig up these stumps.
What did they do with the stumps like?
There's where your chemicals were.
Naval
stores were in those. And they made dynamite out of that, glycerin out of it, you know, and turpentine, rosin.
They had a factory.
They had about 8 or 10 different chemicals out of the stuff after grinding.
See, they would then
a stump plant down at Nocatee.
Yeah,
I've got
a picture of it. They would actually pay the people to remove the stumps out of their land. And then their land would become usable. Then they could farm it, plant groves in it. But until then, there were so many stumps that it was hard to plow in between the stumps.
That's right.
And I remember everywhere you'd go, you'd just see stumps. Remember?
Now all you see is sod planted.
Now
they're planting sod everywhere.
Now the land has been cleared of
all
the stumps.
Sod all around across where we did.
And land's more valuable because it's more usable now. And it's so expensive. You can't buy it to farm it or plant a grove on it or raise cattle on it. You have to inherit it, or you have to, like some of the recent range cattle people, they've made their money and other things. They come down here and they use it as tax write-off. They raise wild animals on it, like deer and turkey and things like that, and cattle, of course, and they don't have to make money on it because it's used as kind of tax drive. Then they bring their friends down here and they go hunting. And they preserve the land, though, actually, when you think about it, they're conserving the land.
Yeah.
And yet, if they had to make a living off of the land, they couldn't do it at the price, at the value of land now.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, sir.
I hope you didn't catch too much of what I said.
Only the good stuff.
Well, thank you for that thing. Come back to see us.
We will.
Let me see you. Okay.
Thanks for the oranges.
Yep.
Bye-bye. Nice meeting both of you.
They're really nice. They got temple oranges out there. A tree just
this
loaded.
This is my daughter. Now, she's adopted me.
You've been good?
For months before, I had to adopt one. I just have one daughter. I got one daughter.
The one that lives in
Cocoa. I got three nieces that's just like my daughter. And she's one of them. She listens to us when we want to fuss and helps
us
when
we're sick.
She listens to me when I want to fuss too.
Very good.
Have you got a beautiful photograph?